Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a Getaway Friday. First Friday in the month of December 2021. 12/3/21, 17 minutes past the hour. Want to thank Bob Bender, legendary broadcaster here in Marion, teacher, and a guy, just an all-around good guy, who joined us in hour number one to talk about the big Christmas at the Palace show, which will be taking place tonight and tomorrow night, 7:30 p.m. and 2 p.m. is the matinee on Sunday. If you're interested in tickets, 740-383-2101. And I do want to remind everybody that Christmas in the Village of Caledonia will be going on tomorrow, Saturday. And I will be lighting the tree, or a part of the tree lighting ceremony, and reading 'Twas the Night Before Christmas tomorrow night. And I believe that's at 7 p.m. in the town square in Caledonia. Now, overnight, and I'm not even sure what to say at this particular point, because a lot of people are angry today in Marion and surrounding areas. And I guess I'll just read the story as I have it. We learned yesterday that this had happened, and it's hitting a lot of the news media this morning. So here's what it is. The former Marion County judge and his wife convicted in a June 2020 hit and run, or well, they call it hit and run, hit and skip, whatever it would be, will get to stay out of prison for now. The Third District Court of Appeals denied their appeal earlier this week and ruled Jason and Julia Warner would have to serve their two-year sentence. On Thursday, yesterday, the Ohio Supreme Court stepped in and granted a stay in their sentencing. They were supposed to report to the Marion County Sheriff's Office this morning, Friday morning. Now they will be allowed to stay out while the Supreme Court considers their appeal. And reading the messages and just the emails that I got this morning, people are maybe angrier than I have seen them. And coming in on very short notice this morning to explain all of this to us, good friend of this program, Marion County Prosecutor Ray Grogan. Ray, how you doing?
Doing very well, Scott. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for coming on in short notice. A lot of angry people this morning.
Sure. Yeah, I believe that to be expected. It's certainly an interesting development.
In legal terms, what happened earlier this week when the appeal was denied, and then what happened yesterday?
Sure. So a couple of comments to begin with. So again, the Ohio Attorney General's office is handling both Mr. and Mrs. Warner's case. My office is not. And they handled the trial of both of those cases. They've handled the appeals of both of those cases. They've been handling it throughout its pendency. So any comments that I make are solely from items that are publicly available. I went and looked at the Supreme Court docket last night when I had heard the news, and so I could get an idea of what was going on. So I say that because any comments that I make are based on information, and I want to be very clear about this, that is publicly available and that I've been able to observe and digest along with everybody else. But to answer your question, so after any criminal case is done at the trial court level in the state of Ohio, the defendants have an appeal, what we call as of right. And essentially, that means that the courts of appeal, which there are 12 in the state of Ohio, don't have discretion whether or not to take the case. They have to hear it. And so, with very rare exception, but ultimately, as a matter of course, anytime there's a trial which results in a conviction, we fully expect there to be an appeal, and that goes to, here in Marion, that goes to the Third District Court of Appeals, which is situated in Lima. The Third Appellate District is comprised of 17 counties, many of them basically from Marion, kind of draw at a 45-degree angle northwest of here, and it encompasses pretty much all of those counties. And that's what happened in this case. They went to the Third District Court of Appeals. As you may remember, I believe it was back in May, the Third District Court of Appeals granted both Mr. and Mrs. Warner a bond so that they would not be incarcerated while their case was pending before the Third District Court of Appeals. Decision came out on Monday of this week, by the Third District Court of Appeals that upheld or affirmed both the convictions for Mr. Warner and Mrs. Warner. And as a lot of people were made aware, they were ordered to turn themselves in to the Sheriff Matt Bales for transport to be incarcerated again. What it appears from looking at the public docket at the Ohio Supreme Court, that they both have filed notices of appeal, so they plan to appeal their case to the Ohio Supreme Court, and the court has granted what's called a temporary stay of execution of the sentence that was imposed by Judge Cosgrove, and that is it is granted pending a ruling on their full motion to stay the execution of sentence and the continuation of bond. So it is stayed for the time being until the Ohio Supreme Court decides whether to grant them another bond while their case is on appeal to the Ohio Supreme Court.
Now, as far as the bond goes, the granting of the bond by the Ohio Supreme Court, how long does a process like that take?
I don't know, because in my years of practice, I have never dealt with a bond at the Ohio Supreme Court.
Well, I think that's what people are angry about. I don't know that people are really angry about appealing, because people do have the right to do that. A lot of people do that. I think what people are angry about today is that they're getting to stay home while these appeals happen, and that is not typical. Is that a typical thing?
No, it is. It is not typical. No, I've in my years of practice, I've never seen an appeal bond be granted in a case here in Marion County by the Third District Court of Appeals, nor from the Ohio Supreme Court. So it is absolutely atypical.
So, in just your opinion, as somebody who obviously knows something about the law, what is happening here?
I don't know. I think the issue is I have every confidence in our judicial system. I have devoted my life to it. And I think that what is happening is that they're making arguments as to why their bonds should be maintained, and ultimately we'll see if the Supreme Court agrees with that, if they hear the appeal, and whether they agree to continue a bond throughout that process. I can't really comment any further, because do I think that there's something else at play or anything like that? I don't. I have every confidence that, I know and have interacted with all of the judges on the Third District Court of Appeals. They are all good men. They are all good judges. I was just in front of the Ohio Supreme Court last month. Well, I suppose it was in October now, so not last month, but, very recently. And they are all learned people. They take their jobs very, very seriously. So I don't want to fuel the notion that there is special treatment or anything of the like. I just think that this is a very unusual situation.
Unusual because of the case? Unusual because... because of what's happening. I think that's what people are having a hard time targeting, and I'm not exactly sure that people are saying that there's anything wrong with the legal system. I think what people are confused about is what you just said. Why is this so unusual?
Well, I mean, the entirety of it is unusual, right? I mean, we have a sitting judge and his wife who, have the incident, the crime, occur, and then, have a public trial, and then that gets, obviously, a lot of attention, and rightfully so. It ought to get a lot of attention. And then, we have the appeal, and they're out on bond during the appeal, and now this, the whole situation is entirely confounding.
Yeah, one of the things here, when we talk about the length of this, just when the judgment came down from Judge Cosgrove in the trial, that was April, mm-hmm. and here we are in December. And the Warners are still out, and appeals are still going. How does that happen?
I'm so sorry. Can you please repeat that? I'm so sorry.
Yeah, no. I mean, the verdict came down in April from Judge Cosgrove here in Marion, and here we are in December, and the Warners are not incarcerated during these appeals. And I think that's the big question. What could be happening here? Is a strong case being made? Is that what's... I think maybe that's what people fear,
sure.
is that there is some validity to their case, that they shouldn't have been found guilty, and that's why these courts... I mean, the first appeal, that's your right, but this whole Supreme Court thing, they're saying, maybe there is some validity to it.
Well, the Third District didn't think so. It was a 3-0 decision to uphold both of their convictions. And so I think that, whether there's validity to it or not, that's entirely up to at this point, the Ohio Supreme Court. The Third District did not believe so, and which is why they, ruled the way that they did. Yeah, the short answer is, Scott, I wish I had an answer. I wish I had something I could point to and say, this is what happened and here's why. But this is, as I said, incredibly unusual. First time I've seen it.
The big argument I think that people are making this morning, if you go on social media or anybody who's gotten an email about this like I have or a Facebook message, it is if you are a judge, if you have the money for a good legal team, you can get things like this done. And you can keep out of prison. And the law isn't so blind. And it's very interesting because, we just put the blindfold on Lady Justice because the law is supposed to be the same for everybody. But yeah. Is it?
I can certainly understand how an individual could look at this situation and think that it is not. What I can tell you is that the judges that I practice in front of here in Marion, the judges that I practice in front of in Lima, in front of the Third District Court of Appeals, and the justices on the Ohio Supreme Court really do hold to that standard that justice is blind. If I did not believe so, then I wouldn't have devoted my life to it. Do I understand the outrage? Do I understand the anger? Of course I do. I absolutely do, and I can absolutely appreciate those thoughts because it does certainly does lend itself to this idea, and I think somebody could certainly I understand somebody who draws a conclusion that says there's two systems of justice here. All I can say about it is I share your concern. I do, but believe me, I do. Given our judicial system as it stands, what I have devoted my life to, I don't know what to attribute it to, other than you know, what it is.
If I am Bob Smith in Marion, Ohio, and I get convicted of the same crime, if I can't afford a high-priced attorney, if I can't, if I am not involved in the legal system, is this going to happen with me? Can I now point to this and say, well, it didn't happen to them, so it, I should be able to stay at home as well?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that anybody who, first of all, access to the courts is uniform, regardless of ability to pay, regardless of social status, regardless of political status, access to the courts are open to everybody. And but yeah, do I fully expect, quite frankly, people to point to the Warner's case in cases that we handle here in Marion in the future and say, yeah, well, listen, if while my case is on appeal, I should have an appeal bond for sure. I've met with my staff about it. We discussed it, and I think that to that point, we fully expect people to do that.
Has this changed the legal system in this area? Because I really don't know how far this story has gotten out. But if you're in Marion or you're in the Columbus area, the Columbus News seems to be covering this pretty well. Has it changed how it runs prior to April when this happened? Because now there is a case, very specific, a conviction, where people have stayed out of prison during their appeal.
Well, I certainly think that people can point to this and say, you know, look, you know, I should have the opportunity for a for an appeal bond. You know, I think that they can use it. I think it is certainly available for public consumption. I think their bond was, I believe it to be $100,000 that they had to pay cash or surety at the appellate court level. So they did have to pay something, but the idea that there was a bond, so prior to trial, generally speaking, an individual has a right to bail or bond to assure their appearance because you're presumed innocent. That right goes away once you have been found guilty or you've pleaded guilty to a criminal offense. You no longer enjoy the presumption of innocence, and as a result of that, bond is not guaranteed to be issued by the court. And so, you know, the fact that a bond was issued after they were convicted at trial was unusual, you know. But they did have to post it, so they did have to post that bond, you know. And so if you're a person, so the point that I'm making is even if you point to these cases of Jason and Julie Warner as a case that supports the proposition or the idea that, hey, I'm out on appeal, I should still get a bond because the Warners did, you still may have to post something, which then goes back to the question you just posed, which is if you're a person who doesn't have a lot of means, or if you're a person who doesn't, you know, have the money to do that, you know, it may not be something that practically speaking is going to be available to you. And so it does, it breeds this notion that, you know, maybe there's a separate justice system. What I can tell people, though, is given, even with those thoughts, my opinion still is that justice is blind, that we have the greatest criminal justice system in the world. And though this situation is unusual, I do not believe that it's indicative of a larger problem with our judicial system. Though people who feel that way and disagree with me, I can't argue with their position.
Well, you know, it's a very interesting thing because I don't think anybody, and I haven't heard it, is saying that the legal system is fractured as far as rulings goes, because obviously they were found guilty, and in the third district, their appeal was denied, and we don't know what will happen with the Supreme Court.
That's right.
But the problem is that what it looks like is the more money you have and the more access you have, the better chance you have of making this an easier road. And that's the iniquity that people, I think, are furious about.
Yeah, and I can how anybody could disagree with that. that notion. I you know, it's certainly, there are certain aspects of our judicial system that could lead one to that conclusion, and I think it's a perfectly reasonable conclusion to draw.
You know, Ray, when you think about this, I mean, you are a prosecutor, Marion County prosecutor. It's obviously very important to you. I would think you would have to love the law to do a job like that. When you look at this, I mean, you go in and you want to prosecute people who you believe to be guilty. But when something like this happens, and people who have been found guilty are allowed to stay at home for 7+ months now, what does it make you feel like? So this is your field.
Yeah, and not to get too to talk too much about me individually, but you know, my father left my mother and I when I was 4 years old. I was raised by a single woman in a 2-bedroom apartment, and so the law appealed to me because, from what I could gather, even at a young age, the law afforded me an arena where, regardless of your social status, regardless of the amount of money that you had, regardless of any of that, everybody was equal. And that was very appealing to a young kid, again, growing up in a 2-bedroom apartment with a single mother, that I can go into this field where everybody is treated equally, which is, you know, very much not the case in so many other segments of our society. And I think that there's an expectation that our legal system, particularly our criminal justice system, is equal. And, you know, and so when anomalies occur, people have questions, and it does chip away at that solid bedrock foundation of we are all equal here. And, you know, the system that I have devoted my life to, the system that I practice in front of, the system here in Marion County, I believe is filled with people who are as devoted to that premise as I was as a little kid, that was appealing to me when I was a little kid, and that I am devoted to now as an adult. But the anger, the angst, the anxiety that some have when, as I said, analytic situations come up, I think is absolutely justified, for sure.
Being that this case has taken place in Marion, tried by the Ohio Attorney General's office, not by any local office, but as the Marion County prosecutor, when you go to prosecute somebody at this point, because of the precedent that this case has set, if somebody is found guilty, you know, Bob Smith, who's making $20,000 a year and who has the right to appeal their case, and maybe even the case isn't as severe as what the Warners were charged with and convicted of at this point, would you have a hard time now saying, well, I don't think they should have an appeal. I don't think they should be able to stay at home, I guess is what I'm more saying. I don't think they should be able to have that bond to stay at home while the appeal's going on.
No, I don't think it certainly, nothing that has happened in the Warner's case has changed my outlook, has changed the way that I do the business of the prosecutor's office in the local Marion County courts. That being said, what we have to be cognizant of now, myself as well as my assistant prosecutors, is that there are going to be arguments, for sure, of individuals who will argue for a bond that's either reduced or a bond that, you know, affords them the opportunity to be out while their case is pending, in a court of appeal, or something of that nature. So I don't think it's changed the outlook of how we operate. I don't think it's changed the outlook of how we do our jobs. What it has done, though, is put these other arguments in the arena, and that we have to be prepared to respond to them.
At this point, as you said when we started, what is going on now is the Ohio Supreme, we're waiting to see if the Ohio Supreme Court rules on if a bond should be granted as it was by the 3rd District. Now, they have agreed to take the case, though. took 7 months for the 3rd District to get the case and rule on the case this past Monday. I think it was May to April or May through the 1st of December. Now, with the Supreme Court, Ohio Supreme Court, how long could a process take?
Months. You know, it's pretty similar to that of an appellate, a district court of appeal decision. In practical terms, it's a little it's a little bit of an easier transition because so when a case goes from the trial court to one of the courts of appeals. So let's take a case here in Marion, for example, that goes to the 3rd District Court of Appeals. There are certain things that have to be generated to go to the Court of Appeals. So, for example, a transcript of the proceeding. So every word that was uttered at trial, at perhaps a hearing before or after the trial, all of that has to be transcribed. And that can take weeks, if not months, to complete, depending on the length of the trial. And so those things have to be done, and then it's after that is done, the transcript is prepared, and all the exhibits and things have been assembled and such, that the lawyers get to work crafting their briefs, which they submit to the court, which essentially outlines their arguments as to why they believe their side should win. And so, with a Ohio Supreme Court case, or appeal, what it boils down to is that transcript is already done. You know, the hearings have already been transcribed, and so, excuse me, the upfront work, so to speak, you know, a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of getting the case to them has already been assembled. So it can be quicker in that respect, but the, you know, in terms of the arguments and the briefings and the waiting for a decision are pretty similar.
Because they were granted a bond in the 3rd District, and because obviously they did not break that bond, does that help with their case with the Supreme Court of getting a bond?
Yeah, I'm sure they will make arguments to that point, but I, quite frankly, I don't know, just because personally I have never encountered this.
We all know what the trial is. A lot of us watched it. It has certainly been in our face here in Marion, so it's not like as if we don't know what happened at this particular point. That being said, what could possibly be the loophole here that would stop this from happening? Would stop this incarceration?
You know, I would have to defer to the Ohio Attorney General's office with respect to that. I say that because I've not done the briefing on it. I've read the decision, but from the 3rd District Court of Appeals, both of them. But I, you know, in terms of what could be argued now, I don't know, quite frankly. That'll be up to the lawyers handling it.
When it comes to this case in general, being a judge, what does this say about people in high places? Is there any lesson to be learned here? It certainly got covered more because he was a judge, yeah. But you know, in the end, did it also benefit him to be a judge, a well-known person?
You know, here's the short answer is I don't know, and any opinion I gave will be just that, an opinion. I think that regardless of this case, people, whether it be in Marion County or any other community, we ought to be holding our elected officials to a higher standard. And when I was on the show before, and you and I discussed this case before, I said that repeatedly. Regardless of this case and the Warner's case and the actions that they took that night, or quite frankly didn't take that night, what I hope the community takes from this is that we have to hold our elected leaders responsible for their conduct, both in office and out of office, and that they ought to not just aspire, they ought to live their lives in a way that reflects well on the community and that people can be proud of. And, you know, I think that that is so tremendously important that we don't allow one case of a former judge dictate how we go about gauging the effectiveness of other people in our community, and I hope that we continue to hold people to account, both, again, while they're in office and out of office, and I think it's extraordinarily important to do that.
You have said through this interview that you have not heard of a situation like this before. When you heard of this last night, what was your immediate reaction?
Really? That was my reaction. You know, coupled with, you know, the thought that, you know, there are going to be people in our community who are going to be bothered by this, and that it's going to be my responsibility to do everything that I can to allow people to understand that, listen, the system works. And this, you know, the legal process is you know, a process that, while it can certainly be confusing at times, it is a process that everybody that I've met who's devoted their life to it takes up the job in earnest and tries to do the absolute best they can. And while, you know, there may be decisions that sometimes that may very well be unpopular, that this is not the function of anything other than, you know, legal arguments that have been made, and that I view it as my responsibility to, you know, if somebody were to inquire, it turns out you did this morning, you know, to really impress upon people, you know, just that.
You know, we haven't talked a whole lot about this in the last 7 months, and I think the last time we talked about it was when the verdict came down back in April. So I want to ask this question again, only for this reason, and I understand it's a complete opinion question. But, you know, Jason Warner was a judge. He was an elected official here in Marion. He, obviously, you knew him to some degree, argued cases in front of him. You both, I believe, were of the same political party. Now, after the verdict and after the appeal and after the stay at home and after the appeal being denied and the night before they're supposed to report to the sheriff's office, it goes to the Supreme Court and there's another stay here. You know this man. What do you make of the man now? Because there have been comments made in court by him that we have talked about being a little strange, letters that were sent out in resignation that were a little strange. Now, after all this, does this say about this man who was a judge in this community, Jason Warner?
You are right. I particularly during the campaign season of 2018, I got to know him pretty well, and then practiced in front of him for you know, a year and a half before this tragic event unfolded. And I am just, as I said to you before, you know, when the sentence was handed down, I am just completely shocked at what his actions were that night, and I'm completely shocked by what his actions have been since then, and disappointed.
Yeah. Have you spoken to him since he's been on appeal?
I have not. No.
Yeah, it's very interesting because I think in this whole thing, when it's somebody who's in your community, when it's somebody who runs for office, everybody, and it's a common thing, everybody who runs for an office like that, prosecutor, judge, you want to be tough on crime. We want to have safe streets for law-abiding citizens. There's no doubt about it. But when you're accused of a crime, there's a big irony there, I guess.
Certainly. And I think it's, you know, as I said before, it's extraordinarily tragic, you know, for the young man who was left in that car unconscious in the middle of the night on a dark country road. It's a terrible, terrible set of circumstances that are remarkably ironic. And, you know, I think, though, as I'm talking about that, what I can tell your listeners is that they can have every confidence in the judicial system. Again, I want to really underscore that. I think that the local judges, our judges on the Third District Court of Appeals, and the justices at the Ohio Supreme Court are dedicated public servants who do their job, who look at each case on an individual basis and make decisions based on what is in front of them. And I think that they are, regardless of political party, regardless of judicial philosophy, each and every one of them does it. And so I may not have been as clear about that, but I want to be very clear about that. With respect to the larger community question that I think gets asked, you know, from the situation as it and the whole case as it has unfolded, is while that young man was there, unconscious on a dark country road in the middle of the night, people came to help him. And they pulled their cars over to the side of the road. They came out of their houses. They did everything they could to help him and assist him before the first responders could even get there. And what I hope we can take from this case is that is indicative of what our community is all about. I really hope we can take that from this, regardless of everything else that has transpired.
We have a few minutes left here, and I just want to clarify this again, because a lot of people are hearing this for the first time this morning, because this happened late yesterday. Now, the first appeal in the Third District, now that's everybody's right. Now, the Supreme Court does not have to take the case. They have said they would. What does that say?
Well, I don't know that they have said they would. Looking at the public docket, what has been filed is a notice of appeal, which puts the Supreme Court and the other parties on notice that says, "Hey, we are going to we intend to appeal to you," and puts everybody on notice that that's what's going to happen. They've also filed a motion for the stay of the execution of their sentence. The court has granted a stay until it can consider that motion. But the other thing that would need to be filed, which I do not see in the public docket yet, is a document called a Memorandum in Support of Jurisdiction. And essentially what it is it explains or argues to the Ohio Supreme Court that says, hey, even though you don't have to take this case, here's why you should. And generally speaking, though the Supreme Court wants to hear cases that involve either a substantial constitutional question or is a case that is of great public or general interest. And so those are the standards. And there's cases that explain, you know, what that means and what that doesn't mean and so on. But so that's where we are from what I have gleaned from the publicly available docket, that they filed the notice of appeal. They filed their motion to stay the execution of their sentence. But so far, that's all that's been filed.
Would you expect, now knowing that they have not decided if or if not to take it, and this is really just a stay of the stay-at-home bond at this point, after the Third District's ruling on Monday, would you expect this to be that decision, to be a fairly quick decision, not a seven-month decision?
Whether to take it or not?
Whether to allow them to stay at home at this point?
Yeah, I would imagine that the Ohio Supreme Court will take that up relatively quickly, and you know, that would be my expectation. Of course, I mean, the Ohio Supreme Court turns out does not answer to me, so you know they have great authority to do what they believe to be in you know, serve the ends of justice, but I would imagine they would take care of it, you know, pretty quickly.
Would pretty quick, like weeks, months?
Yeah, I would imagine so.
Yeah,
I would. That would be my anticipation. I mean, do I know? No, absolutely not. But that would be my That's what I would anticipate.
Two quick questions here, and I appreciate the time this morning, because I think a lot of people were very confused about this. In the end, and again, we'll, I guess, never know, but this part of the whole drama that's been going on for over 2 years now, does this boil down to two people, and not that anybody ever wants to go to prison, but does this boil down to two people who really are scared to death to go to prison?
Well, I think certainly one could draw that conclusion, sure. I mean, I think everybody who goes to prison, let me put it this way, I think it's a rare individual who is facing the prospect of going to prison who isn't scared or at least nervous about that, sure. Yeah, I think that's probably a fair conclusion.
Yeah. And in the end, because of this crime, you know, there are financial crimes, there are crimes that involve two people, assault and battery and things of that nature. Is it because of what happened here? Somebody could have died. This could have been a life and death situation that somebody walked away from. It isn't political parties. It doesn't involve money. It doesn't do that. A boy, really a boy, could have died on a road that night. Is that the heartstrings of this case that makes the reaction to this whole thing so intense?
Of course. Yeah, I think you hit it right on the head. You know, I think that given just that, the case involves a living, breathing human being, and I think absolutely it's going to stir emotions in people. And so, I completely understand that. It's what my office encounters every day, living, breathing people who have been the victims of a criminal offense. I mean, that's what we do here. And but again, what I hope everybody can take from this is that they can have every confidence, though it may be confusing and bewildering to some, certainly. They can have every confidence that the criminal justice system here in Marion and in the Third District Court of Appeals and at the House Supreme Court is a system filled with people who are dedicated public servants who want to see that justice be done.
Final question this morning, because this is the question that everybody has this morning after all of this, and somebody who in the legal profession can maybe give us an opinion on, is there any chance at this point, high chance, well, I guess let me say this, what is the percentage that at this point Julia and Jason Warner could avoid prison time?
I don't know. I wish I could give you a percentage, because I think it might, we tend to like numbers and percentages to make things a bit more digestible. I just don't know. What I do know is that the Ohio Supreme Court will listen to the arguments, and they will make a decision based on reason and common sense, and they will make a decision that ultimately they believe to be just.
Do you feel it is likely?
I don't know.
It's a hard thing to say, I think.
Yeah.
In the end, who knows, I guess, is the way it goes. But what will this say? What is this story going to play out in the history of Marion, just like everything else? What will this story tell us about ourselves?
Well, I think we've got a decision, right? We can let it be a story about two people who drove off and left a young man there on the side of the road, or we can let it be a story about the people helping this boy who were complete strangers to him, who came out of their cars and came out of their house and rendered aid before the paramedics and the police could get there. I would like our community to focus on that story, because I think that's more indicative of what our community represents as opposed to Jason and Julie Warner.
Marion County Prosecutor Ray Grogan came on very short notice this morning, and I appreciate it. Thanks, Ray.
The pleasure is always mine. Thanks, Scott.
Bye-bye. Ray Grogan, there you go. Coming back with fun stuff after this.
Merry Christmas.